There are other reports that Afghans here in the U.S. southern border that are facing very similar conditions where they're not being welcomed. They are traveling multiple continents, 12 to 14 countries, just to come here in the U.S. and be locked up in discriminatory policies that are really targeting Muslims and Afghans.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Sadaf Dost, for joining us. African-American attorney, Bertha Justice Fellow at the Center for Constitutional Rights. And we can will continue to follow this case. To see our podcast, video and audio podcast, and sign up for our news website, you can go to democracynow.org, our newsletter. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KABU in accordance with and requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee will meet twice in September via public video conference. The Finance Committee will meet on Thursday, September 7th at 5:30 p.m. and again Thursday, September 21st at 5:30 p.m. A public link and phone number to attend the virtual meeting can be found at our website at KBOOFM. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, residents of the Beaver Creek watershed push to preserve their water supply in the face of aerially sprayed pesticides.
A local nonprofit joins hands across the bridge to support a recovery community.
And lots of local labor news. Multiple strikes are planned in Portland this holiday weekend.
Good evening. This is KABU Evening News for Friday, September 1st, 2023. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Josh Salem. For residents of the Seal Rock Water District in Lincoln County on the Oregon coast, tomorrow isn't just the start of Labor Day weekend. It's also the beginning of an aerial pesticide spraying window that could contaminate their water supply. KABU's Althea Billings has more on the story.
On Thursday, August 31st, the Seal Rock Water District in Lincoln County held a meeting for community members to ask questions about how their water supply might be impacted by aerial pesticide spraying. At the beginning of August, residents in the Beaver Creek watershed got a notification that a nearby property owner would be spraying pesticides on their land via helicopter between September 2nd and November 30th. This raised a great deal of alarm, since the spray would likely end up in the water supply for some 5,500 residents, and the spray can drift up to 2 miles depending on the wind conditions. Residents of the water district have been organizing for a month to try to stop the aerial pesticide application. The chemicals that the landowner plans to spray include glyphosate, which increases the risk of non-Hodgkin lymphoma by 41% if you're exposed to it. At the meeting on Thursday, residents expressed their worry for themselves, their families, and the wildlife that surrounds them on the coast if they're exposed to these chemicals. Seal Rock Water District General Manager Adam Denlinger described the work that his office had been doing in the past weeks. He described meeting with county commissioners and State Representative Gomberg. He described reaching out to state agencies like the Oregon Department of Forestry, of Environmental Quality, of Agriculture, and the Oregon Health Authority. The district spoke with the governor's office as well. But none of these agencies or authorities have the power to stop the spray, even though it's all but guaranteed to get into the water supply of over 5,000 people. That's because the state has a preemption law when it comes to pesticide regulation. Only state-level legislation can change the regulation of how pesticides are used, and critics say that Oregon regulations are not strong enough to protect people. That's why a 2017 ballot measure in Lincoln County to ban aerial pesticide spray was actually overturned by county and appeals courts in 2019. Denlinger says the water district plans to test and sample the water to see if it's been contaminated with pesticides. At an earlier meeting, he said the district could divert its water supply to instead pull from the Siletz River as an option, but community members pointed out that the Siletz River is scheduled to be aerially sprayed around the same time. There's also a second pesticide notification from the landowner who lives internationally. This one is for backpack spraying, same chemicals but done by hand. That type of permit means they don't have to tell anyone, including the state, when they will actually be spraying the area. The water district, local representatives, and residents have tried to reach the landowner to persuade him to change his mind about spraying, but they haven't made much progress so far. Drifting spray, water contamination, or making people and animals sick could be a violation of the law, but a lawsuit could only proceed after the impacts have been felt by the community. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
The next Seal Rock Water District Board meeting is scheduled for September 14th at 4 p.m.
Oregon taxpayers are set to receive their largest tax kickback ever. Over $5 billion will be returning to people's pockets next spring. For the lowest earners, that means $60 return from the state. For the 1%, it could be as much as $44,000. For the average taxpayer, it'll be about $980. Oregon's kicker law is unique. The state returns revenues when the collection is more than 2% higher than the forecast. It'll come in the form of a credit when Oregonians file their taxes next spring. Why were forecasts so different from the actual revenue? State economists had something of an outdated economic model, which didn't account for how inflation would impact the state's revenues. It also points to a strong economic resilience in Oregon post-pandemic.
Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler plans to reintroduce an ordinance making it illegal to consume drugs in public spaces to City Council next week. It would add to an existing city ordinance that bans drinking alcohol in public. Anyone convicted of violating the ordinance would face a $500 fine or could spend 6 months in jail. It's very similar to a plan that Wheeler introduced, then backtracked on earlier this summer. Currently, there's a state law on the books that prevents local governments from prohibiting public drug use. To get around that, this proposed ordinance would have a trigger amendment, meaning it could go into effect as soon as the state legislature or the courts okay it. Wheeler also has a separate resolution that directs the city to lobby Salem to allow cities to ban public drug use in the next legislative session.
Coming up this Labor Day weekend, a local nonprofit will gather those in the recovery community to join hands across Interstate Bridge over the Columbia River. KBOO's Paul Kim spoke with the event's organizers and peer mentors to learn more.
September is National Recovery Month. In an effort to raise awareness, on Monday, September 4th, Hands Across the Bridge will hold its annual event on the Interstate Bridge, promoting recovery and helping to connect people in need to community resources. Hands Across the Bridge is a nonprofit organization that works to build leaders in the recovery community. This is Eliz Quirls, the vice chair on the board of directors for Hands Across the Bridge. She says it's important to challenge the stigma around addiction and mental health.
Substance use and mental health is a family disease. Everyone is impacted by someone that they know that has struggled with this in some way, right? There's so many different pathways to healing and recovery that people don't know about, and they feel defeated and isolated and alone. And so my biggest piece is about connection, and it hurts my heart to know that there are people out there that have not even heard that there is a service, a solution, or a pathway for them, and they're sitting out there isolated, experiencing houselessness, experiencing, you know, disconnect, because recovery is for everyone. For everyone. Every life, every person, every family, every community. And that matters, because we are losing people. We are losing individuals and families and people in our community, and we have to respond.
Candace Altman will be one of the speakers at the Hands Across the Bridge event on Monday. Candace is a peer mentor for the group 4D Recovery. 4D Recovery provides peer supports to young adults navigating early recovery. This includes a wide range of services like attending meetings, helping to obtain SNAP benefits, applying for Oregon Health Plan, going to the DMV to get their license, or getting into detox.
Things, I was stuck on the loop in and out, and I could not figure it out, right? You know, access to all these different kinds of meetings and services, and I became exposed to a world that I didn't know anything about. said, there's people out here that don't know what's available. Like, we just know the loop that we're stuck on. Funny personal story. I just got a letter for garnishment in the mail today. And I'm like, and I know that it sounds ridiculous, but like, I had to get to a place in life where I was, you know, at a job long enough and paying taxes long enough that they knew where to find me. And I know that it might not make sense to somebody who hasn't lived that life, but like, I laughed about it because in some sick way, that's a gift of recovery, that I've established myself enough now that like, I get to make these financial amends. And I know if that can happen for me, that if these people have access to services, access to resources, more boots on the ground showing them like this is a thing and this is possible, I can do it with a little help and exposure. Other people can too.
The event will begin on Monday, September 4th at 10 a.m. simultaneously at two different locations on opposite sides of the Columbia River and eventually combine in the middle of the I-5 bridge. On the Oregon side, the event starts at the Holiday Inn parking lot in Jansen Beach. And on the Washington side, it starts at Esther Short Park. Organizations from both Oregon and Washington will have tables sharing information about services like recovery, medical, housing, mental health, insurance, and safe space programs. More information about Hands Across the Bridge is available online at handsacrossthebridge.org. For KBOO News, I'm Paul Kim.
Washington State is expanding Medicaid coverage to people who are 90 days from release from a state prison or jail. The expansion is largely an attempt to decrease drug overdoses after release. Eric Tegetoff reports.
Washington will allow people nearing release from state prisons and jails to qualify for Medicaid health coverage. The expansion starts in July 2025. Incarcerated Washingtonians, including those in juvenile facilities, can apply for Medicaid up to 90 days before their release. Assistant Director for the Washington State Healthcare Authority, Jason McGill, says one of the most important aspects of this expansion is ensuring people avoid drug overdoses after they're released.
Many may have other either behavioral health, substance use, mental health issues, so need that level of coordination, of benefit, and preferably actually services such as medication for opioid use disorder.
McGill notes most people don't have jobs upon release from prison, so they meet the income threshold for Medicaid. The expansion in coverage is part of an agreement with the federal government on how the state uses Medicaid funds. Research shows the risk of opioid overdose can be up to 10 times higher for people recently released from incarceration. McGill says the state legislature has invested in services for opioid use disorder for people in correctional facilities, which are offering what treatment services they can. But he says there is currently a crucial hurdle to providing more treatment.
It's expensive. And so having Medicaid as a backbone infrastructure covering these services will be so helpful for our correctional facilities.
Washington and California are the first states to announce the expansion of Medicaid for people about to be released from incarceration. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's KBOO's live remote broadcast of the Montevilla Jazz Festival. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be warm and sunny with a high of 84 degrees. Today in history, in 1878, Emma Knott became the world's first female telephone operator when she is recruited by Alexander Graham Bell to the Boston Telephone Dispatch Company. The quote of the day is from Indian-American author, model, and TV host Padma Lakshmi, who was born today in 1970. She said, quote, "The best thing you can do for someone is make them a beautiful plate of food. How else can you invade someone's body without actually touching them?"
Unionized workers at Powell's Bookstore in Portland will go on a one-day unfair labor practice strike on Monday. This comes after months of ongoing contract negotiations with management have stalled. The union is represented by the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 5, or ILWU. They say management has bargained in bad faith by not engaging with union proposals and stalling the process. They're pushing for a living wage for workers after proposals from management failed to address inflation and expensive health care plans. Workers voted to strike in August at a 92% rate. Powell's will close all three of its stores for lack of staffing on Labor Day. The union has asked the public not to cross the picket line and to avoid shopping online. Powell's workers and supporters will picket outside all three stores on Monday, with a large rally happening outside the Burnside location at 1 p.m.
The New Seasons labor union is planning a work stoppage and pickup line at the Arbor Lodge location on Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. It follows an unfair labor practice filing by the union against New Seasons management. The union says that New Seasons has made unilateral changes to their attendance policy. They also say managers have refused to sign an agreement that was presented to them in March to stop unequal treatment at unionized stores. The attendance policy at non-union stores was made for more generous, cutting down the time workers have to wait to have their attendance records reset. It was not extended to the 7 of the 8 unionized stores. The picket will be on Saturday at the Arbor Lodge location from 2 to 3 p.m.
Kaiser Permanente workers are voting on whether they should move closer to a strike. They're calling on the healthcare company to provide more staff and higher wages. Eric Tegetoff joins us again with the details.
As Labor Day approaches, healthcare workers at Kaiser Permanente are weighing authorizing a strike to demand better working conditions. The coalition of Kaiser Permanente unions has been bargaining with the company, but has faced impasses on issues including staffing levels and higher wages. Kevin Darden is a patient access representative at Kaiser Permanente Sunnyside Medical Center in Clackamas. He normally works 36 hours a week, but averaged 56 hours last year to help with the lack of staffing. Darden says many of his coworkers are also working extra hours to meet the needs of patients.
But we've been doing this for about 3 to 4 years now, and we're getting to our point where we're burnt out, we're tired, and we're looking at Kaiser to see, are you going to help us out? Are you going to hire more employees?
Kaiser Permanente workers began voting on whether to approve a strike authorization on August 24th. In response, Kaiser Permanente says the pandemic created staffing shortages for healthcare organizations nationwide, and they've agreed to hire 10,000 coalition-represented jobs in 2023. Staffing levels in hospitals across Oregon will likely go up next year for another reason. This legislative session, state lawmakers passed a safe staffing law requiring hospitals to maintain manageable patient-staff ratios. Darden testified in support of this bill in Salem.
With this safe staffing law, we'll be able to actually hold Kaiser accountable and be able to say, listen, this is the amount of employees that we need to meet these patient demands, and these are going to be our patient-to-employee ratios.
Workers are bargaining on their first contract since the pandemic. Darden says Kaiser Permanente needs to show greater support for employees who help their communities get through COVID-19.
We had to show up every single day and face the unknowns of COVID. And it's not only the hours that we put in, but the amount of stress of not knowing if we were going to get this virus and what it was going to do to us.
Voting on the strike authorization continues through September 11th. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp rejects calls from GOP lawmakers for a special session to examine Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis. Justice Clarence Thomas discloses trips paid for by the right-wing billionaire. And Texas Supreme Court allows a ban on gender-reaffirming care for youth. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You know, these are the distractions that get you to lose elections. The last time we were talking about special sessions here in the state of Georgia, just a few weeks later, the Republican majority lost 2 U.S. Senate races.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp dismissed GOP calls for a special legislative session which would seek to impeach Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis after former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants were indicted on felony charges for their efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump pleaded not guilty on Thursday to the criminal charges he faces in Georgia, meaning he won't make a court appearance next week. The Biden administration has proposed a new rule that expands background check requirements for firearm dealers. Sellers online or at gun shows would be required to be licensed and conduct background checks on buyers. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre calls the move an effective tool to reduce gun violence.
This administration respects the right of responsible gun owners while also believing Americans have the right to live free from gun violence as well. Those two things can exist.
The proposed rule will go through the federal rulemaking process and comes as the country continues to endure increased gun violence. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas had reported taking three private jet trips courtesy of right-wing billionaire Harlan Crow last year. Thomas has been at the center of increasing ethical concerns. Last month at a legal conference in Oregon, Justice Elena Kagan said Congress does have some authority to oversee the court's policies.
Congress should have, you know, the right to consider for itself what it thinks constitutionally appropriate and otherwise appropriate.
Senate Democrats continue to push for legislation that would require a code of ethics for the court, which most Republicans oppose. The ACLU of Montana is supporting a lawsuit to overturn a ban on TikTok. Montana was the first state to effectively outlaw the app when it passed legislation in the spring. The legal director of the Montana chapter of the ACLU, Alex Raitt, calls the move a violation of Montanans' right to free speech.
In order for a democracy to function, individuals need an unabridged right to speak. And when the legislature or the government decides to restrict those ways that we can speak with one another, that violates our constitutional rights.
The Texas Supreme Court allowed a new law that prohibits most gender-affirming care for minors in the state to take effect today. Last week, a state district judge ruled the law violated rights of transgender children and their families and issued a temporary injunction. Democratic Texas Representative John Rosenthal opposed Senate Bill 14 and calls trans rights human rights.
The bill and the false negative and rhetoric around it politicizes kids who are often fragile and at a delicate juncture in their life.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
France is eliminated from title contention at the FIBA World Basketball Cup. NFL teams were forced to shorten their rosters. And a U.S. track star calls out the NBA for their World Championship designation, despite games being held only within the U.S. With more, here's Grant Button with KBOO's Sports News.
France got upset by Latvia last Sunday, officially eliminating them from title contention in the FIBA World Basketball Cup. That's their second loss this tournament as they got blown out by Canada a week ago. In the Latvia game, France had the lead nearly the entire night, with Latvia scrambling to get out of a 13-point deficit in the early third quarter. Slowly, Latvia was able to come back with great three-point shooting and ball movement. With 10 seconds to go, France had the ball down 2 and got a very good 3-point look, which just missed. Not only did Latvia eliminate France, previously considered to be one of the best teams in the tournament, but they advanced past the first round of the tournament, their most accomplished season since they won the whole tournament way back in 1935. I don't know who I'd root for if Latvia and the US faced off in the finals. Speaking of U.S. sports, Tuesday was when NFL teams had to solidify their 53-man rosters, forcing teams to cut 37 players. A few of the more notable cuts included Jamison Crowder, the veteran slot receiver, Colt McCoy, a veteran quarterback that could have made a push for the starting spot due to an injured Kyler Murray, Miles Gaskin, the Dolphins' former rushing leader, and Devon Allen, an Olympic hurdler. Even for Allen, getting cut may be too big of a hurdle to keep his NFL dreams alive, pun intended. In addition to roster cuts, three notable kickers were traded, including veterans Will Lutz, Dustin Hopkins, and Nick Folk. NFL coaches are clearly starting to expect perfection out of their kickers, so much so that the Browns drafted kicker Cade York in the fourth round last year, only to trade him away this year. Talk about a Browns move. Speaking of controversial moves, U.S. track star Noah Lyles called out the NBA for using the words world champions after winning the NBA Finals. This was done in surprising fashion during his post-victory interview at the Track and Field World Championships, where he walked home with three gold medals. During the presser, Lyles said, quote, "You know what hurts me the most is that I have to watch the NBA Finals and they have world champions on their head. World champions of what? The United States?" End quote. This was met with a barrage of comments from NBA stars such as Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, and Devin Booker, all basically shaking their heads at him, with Durant's comment simply being, quote, "Somebody help this brother," end quote. That's one way to boost your fame. For KBOO Sports News, I'm Grant Bunn.
One nonprofit trains science teachers to weave storytelling into their lessons. The idea is to help students connect what they're learning with their culture and community. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizewitz, and this is Climate Connections. Writing poems and interviewing family members might sound like assignments for a language arts class, but a Washington State-based nonprofit called Islandwood is helping middle school science teachers weave these sorts of activities into their lessons about climate change.
The focus of our work with teachers is connecting the learning, the teaching they're doing in the classroom to their local place, their community, their students, the interesting identities of the students, the local ecosystems.
Brad Street is Islandwood's Senior Manager of Professional Development. In one teacher training course that his group offers, instructors focus on the problem of flooding in Washington's Snohomish River Valley. They model lessons that middle school teachers can take back to their own classes, from analyzing local seasonal streamflow data to interviewing elders about how things have changed over their lifetime.
Students see how science is actually relevant in their own place, to their own culture, to their community, to who they are, and they see that they can take that knowledge and do something with it, ideally.
He says that local, personal perspective can make them more excited to learn about a global problem like climate change and eager to help their communities respond. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Friday, September 1st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button and Paul Kim. Their producer and our engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizewitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, it's back to school week here in the U.S. Schools, pre-K to college, have been on media's front burner for at least a year now. But education has always been a contested field in this country. Who has access? What does it teach? What is its purpose? Do my kids have to go to school with those kids? So while what's happening right now is new, it has roots, and it does no disservice to the battles of the current day to connect them to previous battles and conversations. And that's what we're going to do today on the show. We will hear from three of the many education experts it's been our pleasure to speak with, Alfie Cohn, Diane Ravitch, and Kevin Kumashiro. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. Today's media debates about education always include politicians politicking, often include right-wing parents who watched a video and now say their kids are being indoctrinated because queer people exist. And they sometimes include teachers who say they are underpaid and beleaguered. you know what they rarely include? Kids. The ones going to school and dealing with the daily fallout of arguments had about them, but without them. What children are mainly is fodder, proof of this or that argument. They're stupid, they're entitled, they're frankly whatever a pundit needs them to be. No one wants reporters to shove a microphone in a 10-year-old's face, but if you're doing a story about children, shouldn't you be at least a little bit interested in children? Counterspin has talked many times with one of the researchers genuinely interested in kids and the way they are treated and portrayed, Alfie Cohn. He is author of many books, including The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. Counterspin's Peter Hart spoke with Alfie Cohn in April of 2014. Let's start with Peter's introduction for some context.
Kids these days, they think they've got it all figured out. Their self-esteem, for no good reason, is through the roof, and they get trophies just for showing up. You hear this stuff almost everywhere, from casual conversations to the newspaper op-ed pages. A new book argues that this conventional wisdom about kids and parenting isn't just misguided or inaccurate. It forms a worldview that is not only deeply conservative in many ways, but it is one that reinforces and recommends a specific political ideology. Alfie Cohn is the author of the new book, The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. It's out now. Alfie Cohn, welcome back to Counterspin.
Thank you.
Now, I used to keep a file of these Every Kid Gets a Trophy These Days newspaper columns, and I was always surprised that there wasn't much of a political pattern to it. The right-wingers and the liberals both had the same complaints.
Exactly.
And it seems that this is part of what inspires the book, that a set of very conservative ideas